It is not hard to destroy a college.
Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Cuts in on the right foot. Launches a golazo!
It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, score!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer, and brought to you in part by Michelob Ultra, official beer sponsor of FIFA World Cup 26.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it. Atlanta Soccer Tonight is live on a Friday night in the A. What's going on? Getting ready for the World Cup. We are a week away from the U.S. men's national team getting things started against Paraguay. We've got some things to talk about with Paraguay. They had a match tonight, and there are some things with players that Atlanta United fans know they did well. And there's a big scare right now for Paraguay on the injury front. We'll see if we get any more updates as we are on tonight. Just a reminder of how this is going to work pretty much all summer long. The schedule will change a little bit, like tomorrow. I'll be live from noon to 2:15, getting you ready for U.S. Germany. We'll be live at Nofo Brew Co. in Gainesville. John Nelson will be riding shotgun with me tomorrow. Take you up to the pregame show on Westwood One. You'll be able to listen to that match with Callum Williams and Kobe Jones on the call here on the station starting at 2:30. Sunday night, I'll be with you from 9 till 11. That'll be a two-hour show on the radio. A lot of things to take away from the weekend with that Sunday show. And then next week, we'll be slightly back to normal until we get to the U.S. match day. 10 o'clock on the radio. We will continue afterwards on YouTube. If you can't always make it to the radio or pull up the Odyssey app, you can catch the whole show on YouTube plus stoppage time where I take some questions. If you've got anything World Cup related you want to dig into, that's where I'll take it. And if you can't make it for that, you can always send them to me. I'm at Longshoe on social media. No problem throwing in some questions that we'll get to on a show. And as you guys know, the podcast edition has all of that combined into one podcast. And you can get that at Off the Woodwork or the Odyssey app or just wherever you get your podcasts. All right, we got a lot of stuff to get into tonight. Kind of an all over the place show as we're 6 days out from the start of the World Cup, 7 days out for the start for the U.S. men's national team. We've had some news today. We've had some more injuries, which are a issue that happens in every World Cup. It's not really out of the ordinary that we're seeing this right now. I don't feel like we're seeing it in a larger scale than we typically do, but it is happening and it is a talking point, and we'll get into that. Second segment, we're going to talk about Argentina, the defending champions who were just moved back into the number one spot in the FIFA rankings after results. That's not necessarily a good thing. It sounds weird, but we'll talk about it on the other side of the break. But let's get into some of the news of the day. And we're going to start with something that has come out this week. FIFA is going to do things differently with their open to the match. I think for most people who have played soccer or watch on a regular basis, you're used to the walkout being both teams coming out, starting lineups next to one another. They go to midfield, one's on one side, one team's on the other side, and then they shake hands afterwards and all that. So FIFA's changing this. They did some different things during the Club World Cup last year, and ooh, a lot of people got bent out of shape. This is where Atlanta Soccer Tonight is an interesting experiment and an interesting laboratory to talk about these sorts of things, because soccer people got really bent out of shape last year during the Club World Cup, where players were introduced individually. Now, if you're stumbling on this show and you hear that and you're like, well, wait a minute, every other sport that I watch here in the US, that's how teams come out. I mean, you think about the first one I always think of is the legendary Chicago Bulls entrance. Well, that's different in the world of soccer. So everybody got bent out of shape about that. I didn't really mind it. It was fine. It was different. It took a little long. That was the only thing I really had an issue with, because instead of basketball where you got five guys coming out, it's 11. Okay, so FIFA went back to the drawing board, and now they're debuting a kind of a 360 concept. So here's the thing to think about, and I don't mind them trying to solve it. When you do this in a match up to this point, and both teams come out, they all face one way. Now, they might turn and wave to the other side of the stadium, but everybody is facing only one side of the stadium. So what they're trying to do is set every fan in the stadium an intentional sight line rather than just part of the stadium. Another change, the entire match day squad will gather in the center circle for the national anthems. The substitutes will be there as well as the starting 11. Players will enter from the tunnel side closest to their team through a dedicated arch. So instead of both teams coming together at the same time and coming out, it sounds like each team will come out through a tunnel. That kind of feels like an American football sort of thing. Again, I don't mind it. I don't care. It doesn't get me upset. I feel like at times in the soccer world, we get a little too hung up on tradition and a little too hung up on, well, this is how it's always been done, rather than trying to change that. I'm okay with trying to change it. Now, I still want it to be good. If you try to change it and it's not good, I'm going to complain. But if you try to change it and you find something better, I'm all for it. Other on-pitch elements will include a central banner in the center circle, handheld country flags, an oversized country flag banner in the stands, all positioned to involve the crowd rather than just frame the players. So FIFA president Gianni Infantino, he wants all players and the referees to face each other in the center circle during the anthems. It creates a moment of unity, he says, pride, emotion. It truly belongs to the teams and everyone in the stadium. I'm okay with the idea. After the anthems, the ceremony transitions to the traditional elements, the handshakes, the team photos of the starting lineups, then the captain's coin toss. Now, they're saying that as the tournament progresses into the later rounds, they'll have additional production elements like colored smoke and pyrotechnics and all that. And of course, the sponsors are going to be integrated into this. There are some really cool elements of this. Quaker, for example, here in the U.S. is a sponsor, and they are going to be integrated into this whole setup with the youth players that will escort the teams out onto the field. They'll be part of that player's tunnel. It'll be a huge moment for the kids that get picked to be part of that. So I want to see it play out. It sounds like a lot on paper. I'm okay with the concept, but I want to see how it comes off. I think this is going to be fine. I think there will be a lot of people probably with English accents and accents from other parts of the world too, but I'm just expecting our friends from England to have things to say about this, let's say. I think most of them will be a little silly. Let's find out how it works. Let's see how the fans react, because that's what's important, right? We can sit here and complain about it all day. We can write all kinds of columns and stomp our feet and bang the table on a podcast. But do the fans like it? If they do, cool. That's what it's here for. All right. Some other stuff from today. This happened last night. We didn't get to finalize it on the show last night, me and Noel, when we had our intersection crossover in stoppage time. Mexico, big win, big second half for them. They defeat Serbia in Toluca. The send-off game, not really send-off, the coming home game for them, because they were in Los Angeles in their last friendly. They're in Toluca for this one. They win 5-1. They'll be headed to Mexico City for the opener of the tournament on Thursday next week against South Africa. Kind of a weird one. You had a couple of big mistakes from Serbia. Serbia has not looked good in this window. A 3-0 loss to Cabo Verde, and in this one, Mexico did dominate the second half, and they had one great goal where Julian Quiñones put it off the post and Raul Jimenez slammed it home. Mexico's going to need Quiñones to be what he's been in the Saudi League, where he's been one of the top scorers. Kind of had to fight his way into this Mexican national team because you just don't see as many Mexican national team players who not just go overseas, but go to the Middle East, for example. So Quiñones, his performances made it kind of inevitable that he'd have to get this opportunity. He could be big for them. Raul Jimenez getting on the board is going to be big for them. I think Mexico will be fine defensively. I worry about them being able to score consistently. Five last night is a pretty good answer to that. We'll see how they do against, I think, a very good defensive team in South Africa. U.S. men's national team in Germany tomorrow. Again, kickoff just after 2:30. You can watch on the HBO Max app. You can watch on Telemundo in Spanish. You can listen here on 92.9 The Game. We got the pregame show starting at noon from Nofo Bruco in Gainesville. A couple of injuries to talk about tonight before we really dig into this game tomorrow. On the U.S. side, Chris Richards will not play tomorrow. He is progressing, and he is progressing to the point that Sports Illustrated reported tonight that he is saying he will be available for the opener a week from tonight against Paraguay. That has not been talked about by Mauricio Pochettino. It wasn't talked about when the media was on site at training today at the Chicago Fire training facility. It wasn't talked about there, but Sports Illustrated has reported that this evening, so keep an eye on that one. Germany, they had bad news on the injury front. Leonard Karl, the 18-year-old, one of the youngest players on a World Cup roster, suffered a serious injury, according to Sky Germany. Julian Nagelsmann, the manager for Germany, said, "We'll have to wait for the diagnosis and see if he'll be able to play in the World Cup or if we will have to call in a replacement." I'm sure there'll be some updates out of the German media tomorrow morning. We'll talk about that on the show tomorrow. On the U.S. side, in this entire cycle since the last World Cup, so 3.5 years, because remember, 2022 World Cup was in that November-December timeframe. The main stars for the U.S., Chris Richards, Christian Pulisic, Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, Phil-Aaron Balogun, Anthony Robinson, Sergiño Dest. I would think all of them would start if they are healthy in these three games. They've only played since the end of the last World Cup together. They've only played together once. 2-0 CONCACAF Nations League win over Mexico in March of 2024. Can they stay healthy? Richards, hopefully he can get back. Tyler Adams, got to stay healthy. Pulisic, I think health has been good for him as of late. Anthony Robinson, same after a long-term injury. Same for Sergiño Dest. But between Dest, Robinson, Pulisic, Adams, and now Richards, that's five of that group that has had pretty significant injury issues over the last few years. All right, let's get into what's on tap. It's brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of FIFA World Cup 26. This U.S.-Germany rivalry, I mean, that is absolutely what's on tap tomorrow. And this is a rivalry that Germany has had the advantage in. They've won 8 of the 12 meetings between these two teams historically. They last played in October of 2023, which was Julian Nagelsmann's first match in charge of the German national team. A lot of guys were part of that team for the U.S. that are on this roster. Christian Pulisic gave the U.S. a first half lead, but Ilkay Gundogan, Niklas Füllkrug, and Jamal Musiala all scored to give Germany a comfortable 3-1 win in Connecticut. For the U.S. against Germany tomorrow, one, it's a big test. This German team, a 4-0 win over Finland in their last match. They weren't really tested too much by Finland. The U.S. had a much better win against Senegal, 3-2 in Charlotte last Sunday. I think it's a game that Pochettino is going to have to be careful with, and we'll get into a lot of this tomorrow. And he kind of hinted at it today in his pre-match press conference. You can get tempted into looking at it as, I've got to play my starting lineup no matter what because they got to get a game together. Yeah, but if guys aren't 100% and Chris Richards isn't, and there might be others that are battling little injuries that we don't know about just yet, you got to protect them. Because as we're seeing with some injuries going on in these pre-tournament games, it wrecks everything at the end of the the preparation, and it's really hard to bounce back from. You got to be careful about that if you're Mauricio Pochettino, and just deal with the game as you deal with the game. You'd like to get some guys together on the field in certain parts of the field to build chemistry, but more importantly, you got to come out of this healthy. U.S. Germany tomorrow, 2:30. You can listen to it right here on 92.9 The Game and on the Odyssey app. Coming up next on AST, we are going to talk about the defending champions, Argentina. They're dealing with some injuries coming into this. They're also playing two pre-tournament friendlies in SEC stadiums. We're going to talk about Argentina on tour in the SEC. Coming up next on Atlanta Soccer tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Into the back of the net! Goal!
Back to more of Atlanta Soccer Tonight
with Jason Longshore.
Welcome back, Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Jason Longshore getting ready for this World Cup. We're 6 days away from it starting, 7 days away from it starting for the U.S. And we'll see if Argentina can do something that one thing has never been done. One thing hasn't been done since 1962. You don't see a lot of repeat World Cup champions. That hasn't happened since Brazil in 62 after winning it in 58 in Sweden. You've also never seen a team that goes into the tournament ranked number one win the tournament. Now, the FIFA rankings are not always the best source of the actual rankings of these teams. I think it has gotten better. We've talked about that a lot over the last few months. They issued a new report after the games this week that the France loss to Ivory Coast drops them. And Argentina is the number one team coming into this. And Argentines, if you don't know this, are very superstitious, extremely superstitious. So they were almost angry that they got ranked number one. There's also a lot of stuff going on in Buenos Aires and in this team right now as they are in College Station, Texas. Yes, Argentina is at the home of Texas A&M. And they will be playing there tomorrow against Honduras before Tuesday night heading to Auburn, Alabama to take on Iceland. Who would have ever guessed that you would have Argentina at Toomer's Corner and the opponent's Iceland in Auburn? Like, that's happening because of this World Cup. Just seeing some of the things like the Spanish national team arriving in Chattanooga and checking into their hotel in downtown Chattanooga today and people in the streets. Like, these are crazy things all happening right now as we get ready for this tournament. But let's talk about kind of where things stand with this Argentine team coming into it as the defending champions. And full disclosure, as most of you know, I'm a big Argentina fan. It's how I fell in love with the game. 1986, when they won the World Cup in Mexico, the semifinal against Belgium, two goals from Diego Maradona changed my life and the whole trajectory of it. A lot of World Cups do that for people. I'm not unique in that sense, but I fell in love with the Argentine game then. And of course, I support the U.S. men's national team. And that's who I'll be rooting for this summer. And I'll be rooting for Argentina right next to that. Just like I was 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago, losing my mind watching that final. So the view right now from Buenos Aires and from Rosario and Mar del Plata, cautiously optimistic, I think is fair. There is a lot of emotional weight with the last dance kind of idea that is going on around Lionel Messi. Also, Argentina woke up this morning to the death of El Indio Solari, one of the most beloved figures in Argentine rock history. And you might wonder how that crosses over with soccer, and we'll get there in a second, but just understand like the Argentine culture a little bit. And when you have music and sport that are very intertwined, you get these crossover moments. So Solari he passed away at 77 this morning. He had lived for years with Parkinson's disease, and fans began gathering at his home within hours, bearing flowers, t-shirts with his nickname. He led a band called Patricio Rey y sus Redonditos de Ricota, one of the most popular and influential Argentine rock groups, 70s, 80s, 90s. Then he went solo. He would draw 150,000 people for his concerts. So, you know, doesn't resonate in the United States in this way, but you're talking about one of the biggest music stars in the history of the country. A lot of his songs ended up being turned into chants and songs from the stands in Argentina at soccer matches. 40 plus years of this. Now, that story kind of stopped everybody in Argentina a little bit this morning, but then there was another layer to it. The soccer journalist Hernan Castillo, he was given an audio message that Solari had recorded for Messi about a month to a month and a half ago. He had met Messi before, and he's talked about Messi and how much Messi meant to him and to the entire country. And a mutual friend passed this message along to Castillo to see if he could get it to Leo Messi. Solari never sent it himself because he didn't know him that well, and he was too shy. It's crazy to think about somebody who would do concerts for 150,000 people that was too shy, but he was. You know, translated, the message is, Lionel, compatriot, it's El Indio speaking. I'm just one more person here who wants to greet you, wants to applaud you. You've been an Argentine sporting treasure. God and the devil gave you unimaginable skill. That's a line. I mean, that needs to be on a t-shirt. I congratulate you, and you've given me many entertaining moments and let me show off to some foreign friends too. He said, well, I send you a hug and wish you a good life. And then he said at the end of it, like, P.S., what if you win one more World Cup? You're capable of it, old man. You're capable of it. Called him viejo in Argentine Spanish. It's kind of like grandpa. It's like old man. It's crazy. One, that on a day where there's sadness in Argentina because one of the most beloved music figures passes away, that there is a soccer component to it, and it involves Lionel Messi. And once Messi heard the message that was played for him, and it's, you know, went through the rounds, it's gone viral in Argentina, he responded with an Instagram story from training camp in Texas, a photo of Solari performing, and the words, always in our hearts, rest in peace. So you have this now that will add to the Argentine story of 2026. And this is a national team that is a very emotional kind of team. They, one, are just very close. This group's been together for a long time. And when new players have come into it, they've integrated into it very well. But the base structure of the veteran players create this family atmosphere. And I think Lionel Scaloni, the manager, has also done an amazing job in playing into that family atmosphere and managing it really well, which previous Argentine managers struggled with. They struggled with the fame of a Lionel Messi, and they struggled to make the team coalesce around him. So Scaloni's got that part handled, but he does have some things he's got to worry about. There are quite a few injuries right now. He said it's improving. Messi joined the team for the rondos at the beginning of the training session today. He's not going to play tomorrow against Honduras, probably won't play in Auburn as well, but he'll be there. He could get some minutes according to Scaloni. So maybe, I would guess, more for the Tuesday game, but I would be very surprised if that happens. So it's an upgrade from his cautious language about where Messi stands earlier in the week. Goalkeeper Dibu Martinez has broken fingers. He's going to be fine for the World Cup, they say. He's being protected in the friendlies. Juan Musso will start tomorrow, and Geronimo Ruggi will start on Tuesday. Santiago Beltran, the fourth string in this scenario, he could get some minutes just in case. Scaloni also told the media today that, I mean, he's really direct on this. If players can't reach the minimum fitness threshold, they will be left out. Now, he said things are going well. And he said that he was capable of making difficult emotional decisions about players who might not be able to make it into this team. Gonzalo Montiel is the one that a lot of people are very concerned about. If you remember, he had the winning penalty in the shootout in the final last time around. You don't want to leave him out, but you also have to make sure that he can play. And they've been pretty careful in training up to this point. Scaloni talked about ramping that up this week as a test. So we'll see. He talked about Messi and just kind of how the whole thing went, as a lot of people were confused about it. I think some of the messaging was confusing around it, about Messi not fully committing to playing in the World Cup. It sounds like Scaloni and Messi kind of danced around it for quite a while. And Scaloni thought Messi might issue a statement about he would play, and he didn't. And Messi sent a message to Scaloni after being asked about it, like, if you call me up, I'm going to play. Yes, but I'm going to wait for the call up. So a lot of star players would, in this case, put out the statement that, yes, I'm available, I'm going to play. Messi didn't. He wanted to just be treated like anybody else. It's a little small thing, but I think it's an encapsulation of how this relationship is with Scaloni, with Messi, with this team. Training today in Texas ahead of the match. Everything was good. A lot of joy, con mucha alegría, in the rondos, in the training session. Again, this is a team that has a lot of togetherness. No Julian Alvarez, no Leandro Paredes during the 15 minutes that were open to media. El Grafico, which is a great source if you want to check out stuff from Buenos Aires and from Argentina, they flagged that as an alarm. No Alvarez, no Paredes. Nico Paz, Nahuel Molina, and Gonzalo Montiel all worked separately. There has been a lot of concern about Nico Paz as well, but that sounds like it's heading in the right direction. Martinez told fans as he got off the bus in Kansas City when he arrived for training camp that he'll be there for the opener. Cristian Romero back in full training. That's a big statement. There's quite a few players that are a concern, but it sounds like they're all moving in the right direction, with maybe Montiel being the biggest worry. Nico Paz spoke earlier to the media. He spoke to ESPN in Argentina, said he's in the final days of recovery, eager to get started. It doesn't look like Argentina is going to replace him on the roster. Now, the thing about the number one ranking, El Grafico ran a piece this morning about this, asking if it was good or bad news because of the curse of being ranked number one coming into the tournament. Most countries, it's like, oh yeah, we're ranked number one, this is great, we're the favorites coming in. Argentina's like worrying about curses because that's what they do. Chiqui Tapia, the Argentine Federation president, who is under some investigations with funds missing from sponsorships. It's a really complicated situation. There was some concern he wouldn't even be able to travel and leave the country. He has. That got worked out. He said to the media that everyone wants to beat us. Kind of the siege mentality, trying to make them kind of, you know, us against the world kind of idea. The big thing about the defending champion thing is it's just so hard. 3.5 years, which is 6 months less than it usually is. That's a long time. Lionel Messi's now 38. Rodrigo De Paul is 3.5 years older. Dibu Martinez, 3.5 years older. Nicolas Otamendi, 3.5 years older. They're all 3.5 years older, but some of them, that 3.5 years puts them in concern for being able to handle a tournament like this. Angel Di Maria, he stepped away after the Copa America in 2024. He probably would still be in this team if he had chosen to stick around. He's such a good player, even still with Rosario Central, but he stepped away because he didn't think he could be here for this. He didn't think he could handle it and play at the level that he wanted to. It's tough. It's tough. Argentina, they start with Algeria, who, remember, had a big win this week. Algeria may be a little bit tougher than you might think. Austria is a really interesting matchup on June 22nd in Game 2 because they're going to press. They're going to try to make life difficult for an older Argentina team. I think they can, but I also think if they get caught with the skill of this Argentine team, and especially with a guy like Messi, they could get exposed in a big way because they're going to be very high up the field. Now, Argentina's easiest game, and sorry, Jordan, you're the lowest ranked team coming into this. It's your first World Cup, and you didn't look great earlier in the week against Switzerland. That's the easiest game for Argentina. That's game three. And when you start to run the math on what it's going to take to get out of the group, if you win a match and don't get blown out in one of the other two, if you win one, if you finish on 3 points, there are studies showing that you will qualify with 3 points 2 out of 3 times. And it'll come down to goal differential, and that's where you got to be careful about not getting blown out in a game. If you get 4 points, you're almost automatically going to qualify. 8 of 12 third-place teams will get into the knockout round. I think 3 points will be enough. I don't think anybody will get through with less than that. And I think it's going to come down to goal difference. So one game, every goal. And I know 32 of 48 teams getting to the knockout feels like a very forgiving format. And I think it is to a degree. But I also think every goal is going to be amplified a little bit in this tournament because of goal differential being such a factor in separating teams and separating who goes to the knockouts, who doesn't, who finishes in what position, what does that change their route to the potential final, how does that look? There's so many permutations of it, it's very hard to predict looking ahead. Every goal is going to be fascinating. So I think you could see some games that do turn into blowouts because teams will want to protect that goal differential. So fascinating. Fascinating to see Argentina tomorrow night at Kyle Field in College Station, Texas, and then Tuesday night at Jordan-Hare Stadium in Auburn, Alabama for their two pre-World Cup friendlies. Coming up next, the 3-4-3 World Cup style. Going to get into three big games to watch tomorrow other than the U.S. We're going to get into some more news of the day, and we'll end on some things that have made me smile as of late. All that's coming up next on Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
And now we end the night with a bit of structure.
Shot! Goal!
Let's get the formation set. It's the 3-4-3 on Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Welcome back, Atlanta Soccer Tonight. The 3-4-3 brought to you by Ford. Visit your local Ford dealer. Got three international games for you to watch tomorrow other than the U.S.-Germany game, which I know you'll be watching and I know you'll be listening to right here on 92.9 The Game. Don't forget, tomorrow noon, a special Atlanta Soccer Tonight today from 12 to 2:15. That will take you up to the pregame show on Westwood One and the broadcast from Soldier Field. Madison Cruz will be calling in. She is in Chicago covering this for 92.9 The Game and SDH. She'll call us at about 1:20 to give us the lay of the land in Chicago. They're expecting a sellout. It should be an amazing atmosphere. As we're seeing really all over the country, getting ready for this big tournament. Tomorrow, noon to 2:15, that's your pregame show for the U.S. men's national team. I will record kind of a quick segment or so of thoughts after the game. You'll be able to get that on the Off the Woodwork podcast, wherever you get your podcast, or in the Odyssey app. And then Sunday night from 9 to 11 on the radio and on YouTube, you'll be able to get a little bit deeper perspective on that game and everything else that happens between now and then, including the games that are the first part of our 3-4-3. Game one, Belgium and Tunisia. It's going to be in Brussels, the send-off match for Belgium. I think it's got real preview value for both teams. Belgium are on a 12-match unbeaten run. They're coming off of a 2-0 win away in Croatia on Tuesday with goals from Tielemans and Lukaku. Kevin De Bruyne, now 4 months removed. He had a good season at Napoli in season one. He did not have that last season. He's still the engine of this team. The golden generation window, I think, is mostly closed, but De Bruyne and Lukaku are trying to keep it open just a little bit longer. Tunisia, they don't come into this in a good spot. They've won 2 of their last 7, including a loss to 10-man Austria. they really need a good performance here. I think they're looking for more of the performance than even the result, because they need some momentum. They're going into the group with the Netherlands, Japan, and Sweden. Three really difficult games for Tunisia. These two met at the 2018 World Cup. Belgium won that 5-2. Eden Hazard and Romelu Lukaku both scored twice. Belgium should be fine, but let's see if Tunisia can show that they can be a challenge for the Dutch or for Japan. I don't think they are. I think Sweden is going to be a challenge as well, but let's see how Tunisia handles things in Brussels tomorrow. Game two in the first part of the 3-4-3, Portugal and Chile. This is in Lisbon. This is the send-off match for Portugal. They're hosting Chile, who did not qualify for the World Cup. Cristiano Ronaldo, he is set for his sixth World Cup. He's the all-time leading scorer in men's international football with 143 goals. The larger story for Portugal is the midfield. Vitinha and João Neves are both absent. Roberto Martinez will use this to test combinations without those PSG starters in the center of the park, giving them a little extra time to recover from winning the Champions League. Portugal haven't conceded a goal in their last two warmups against Mexico and the United States in the last window. The defensive shape looking really good. A lot of people are picking Portugal as a dark horse to win the whole thing this summer. I still think there's some questions, but this is a really good Portugal team. And it's kind of weird that in Cristiano Ronaldo's last World Cup, you would expect this might be the best team around him, even if he is not at his best in his career, because he's at the tail end of it. Game three in your 3-4-3 games to watch tomorrow, England and New Zealand. This is going to be in Tampa at Raymond James Stadium. Thomas Tuchel's side open against Croatia on June 17th. Then they play Ghana. Then they play Panama. The warm-up form has been a conversation in England. Tuchel has won just one of his last four friendlies, had a 1-1 draw with Uruguay in London. A historic 1-0 loss to Japan, the first Asian side to ever beat England in a senior match. Harry Kane's been fine. He's got 10 goals over his last 10 games for England. Finishing isn't the issue. The cohesion, they've dealt with a lot of injuries. Thomas Tuchel had to make some big decisions on the roster and left Cole Palmer out, left Phil Foden out. Can they get a system that clicks before the start of this tournament? We'll see if it does against New Zealand. New Zealand did not look good at all in their most recent game, a 4-0 loss to Haiti, who lost to Peru tonight, had a 1-0 lead, and Peru scored twice in the last 15 minutes to win that match. So Haiti's 4-0 win over New Zealand from earlier in the week doesn't look as good, and it looks a whole lot worse for New Zealand as they go into this match against England. England needs to look dominant. They really do. They have not looked dominant in a long time. New Zealand just needs to show they can be a team that's going to fight this summer. All right, four headlines from all over the game. Let's start in the Women's World Cup qualifying that took place today. Big time result, Spain hammered England 4-0 in Mallorca. Heaviest defeat for England in 17 years. Alexia Putellas scored twice. Patrick Guijarro and Claudio Pina both scored as well. England had gone into this leading the group with four wins from four. They only needed a point to seal automatic qualification. Instead, now Spain and England are both level on 12. Spain's goal differential is plus 13 to England's plus 5. Spain control their own destiny heading into the final game where they face Iceland. England will host Ukraine. Even a big win for England doesn't move that goal differential enough, you would expect. They're going to have to go through the playoffs. Now, the playoffs, they should be fine to get through that, but it's just extra games, extra stress. Number two on the 3-4-3 in the headlines, Julio Enciso. He was stretchered off for Paraguay in their send-off match against Nicaragua tonight in Asunción. And Julio Enciso is Paraguay's best player. Miguel Almiron is maybe the figure of this team because of his longer career, but Enciso is Paraguay's most dangerous attacking player. He left the field in tears after what appeared to be a muscular injury. I don't know if the coaching staff even know what it is yet. Alfaro was a little hard to follow in what the description of the injury was. He talked about two traumas. So it looks like a muscle injury to his quad. the whole crowd went silent watching him go. The technical staff followed that. Nciso plays for Brighton, and he has been one of the most exciting young players in the Premier League over the last couple of seasons. He is the key player for Paraguay to be able to compete in Group D. We'll see if there's updates tomorrow on the severity of this. Miguel Almirón and Matias Galarza both scored for Paraguay tonight in that 4-0 win, but none of that matters until they know about Julio Enciso's status for the World Cup. Number three on the headlines, Fiorentina. Serie A, they have parted ways with their head coach, Paolo Vanoli. Club confirmed that today. Vanoli took over in November of 25 after leaving Torino, managed 38 matches, won 14, drew 11, lost 13. They finished 15th. They avoided the relegation fight, but that's a big underwhelming result for a club of Fiorentina's stature and their ambition. This is a club that had reached back-to-back Europa Conference League finals not that long ago. They've got genuine European pedigree. They're not expected to be in 15th. Vanoli pays the price for that. No replacement announced, but you're going to want to get that done quickly because Fiorentina's got a lot of work to do in the transfer window. Number four, we go back to Spain. A fitting note to end the week on. La Liga named Lamine Yamal as its player of the year today. 16 goals, 12 assists in 28 matches, roughly one goal contribution per game. Carried much of the burden of Barcelona's attack because of injuries to Lewandowski and Rafinha. First player to win La Liga's Player of the Month award three times in a single season. 18 years old. It's looking good for him to be back for Spain. Now, I do wonder in the World Cup if he starts game one or even game two, the two games here in Atlanta that Spain will play. I wonder if we'll see him off the bench. I wonder if you hope you don't have to use him in those games and ease him back in after a hamstring injury suffered back in April. We'll see. This was expected to be the coming out party for Lamine Yamal on the world stage. It still could be, but I think it's going to be just a little bit delayed to the start of the tournament. We'll talk about how managers handle those kind of situations in the stoppage time portion of the show over on YouTube. After we're done here at the end of this segment, come over and join us on YouTube on the 92.9 The Game page. We'll be talking a little bit deeper about some of these things. You can fire off some questions. We'll get into that. But how managers handle injuries to key players, because the U.S. is in a situation, Paraguay now is in a situation, Spain has been in a situation. It's not always a one-way street. We'll talk about that on the stoppage time portion of the show and on the podcast portion of the show. All right, three things that make me smile to end this episode. Kind of a wild one. Two teams that are not talked about very often, but we're going to do that here on AST. Bangladesh, they made history tonight. Their first ever win over European opposition on European soil, a 2-1 win. It was against San Marino. Now, the reason why I say it that way is San Marino are 211th in the FIFA rankings. Beating San Marino is the closest thing world football has to a certainty. They went 20 years without a competitive win. So, yes, Bangladesh making history because it's valid, winning a match on European soil against a European team, that's a big deal. Don't pencil them in for the World Cup anytime soon, but yes, defender Topu Barman scored twice, both headers. The winner was 4 minutes from full time. Bangladesh winners today for the first time in Europe. All right, number two on things that made me smile, Norway, just kind of embracing the moment here. So they released their official squad photo, and everybody went nuts on the internet because the entire squad were dressed as Viking warriors. Helmets, shields, swords, all of it. Shot on a private beach near Oslo by renowned photographer David Yarrow. He said making Erling Haaland look like a Viking warrior was, quote, one of the easier tasks of my career, unquote. Well, yeah, I mean, have you seen Erling Haaland? He just looks like the stereotypical Viking. He kind of plays like one, too. He's going to have to be big for this Norwegian team. Martin Odegaard, he had to be photographed separately after the Champions League final, was digitally added to the image. Good job, AI. Look, and I like that Norway went with this. The FA president, Lisa Klaveness, he said that the Viking story was going to follow this team regardless, so they just decided to own it. First time back at the World Cup since 1998 for Norway. Haaland scored 16 goals in qualifying. They are in a tough group with France, Senegal, and Iraq. But one win should be enough. And they're going to be a problem for France and Senegal because they play in a very different way. They've got a physicality that I think both of those teams will struggle with in different ways. Norway showing up with shields and axes to the World Cup. Number three on the things that make me smile to round out the show, Nike. They dropped their World Cup campaign this week. It is worth your time. The commercial is called Rip the Script. 6 minutes. Created by Whedon and Kennedy, directed by Dan Street. The premise is a chaotic film set that falls apart when an overbearing director tries to control a game that refuses to be controlled. The cast, Cristiano Ronaldo, Kylian Mbappe, Erling Haaland, Vinicius Jr., Ronaldinho, Zlatan, Didier Drogba, LeBron James, Kim Kardashian, Travis Scott, Ted Lasso's in this. Yes, Jason Sudeikis as Ted Lasso. You're trying to live up to two of the best soccer commercials of all time that Nike did. The 1998 airport ad with Yoga Benito and the, I think it was 2002, the secret tournament that was on a ship with Eric Cantona as like the MC. That's my favorite. This one's really good. I think the secret tournament one's just a little bit better. The other subplot to it, and it's like the U.S. promotion with Diego Luna being part of it, Cole Palmer appears in this commercial in full England kit. That'd be fine, except he's not going to be at the World Cup. So he'll be the answer to a trivia question, just like Diego Luna. Go find the six-minute version. It's worth your time. You're going to see the shorter versions a lot this summer. Don't worry about that. All right, again, coming up on YouTube, stay with us. We'll get into how managers manage injury situations. We'll talk about some of the other news of the day. We'll talk a little bit more about U.S. and Germany tomorrow. And then tomorrow, noon to 2:15 AST today, we'll be live from NoFo Brewco in Gainesville. Come see us. If you can make it, you can watch the match there, U.S. and Germany, and you can listen to it right here on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Big thanks to Dom back at the station. And man, you got one more week till the U.S. is in action in the World Cup. Cannot wait for all this to happen. Y'all have a good rest of the night, and then come join us on YouTube for a little bit of stoppage time. Adios, everybody.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to our look at the world of soccer.
And Jason Longshore has it all covered.
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
All right, welcome back to Atlanta Soccer Tonight. We'll get into a little bit of stoppage time. Maybe not super long this evening because it is an early call time tomorrow. A noon start for AST. You'll be able to listen to the whole show on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Me and John Nelson out in public. It's going to be chaos. We'll be at NoFo Brewco in Gainesville. Really looking forward to this U.S.-Germany game. I want to see how the U.S. handles a challenge of a team like Germany. We'll get into that. We'll get into a lot of other things on the show tomorrow as well. We'll also have the debut of our Soccer Down Here lager available in cans for the first time at NoFo Brewco all weekend. We'll have a special show on the SDH network on Sunday from 2 to 3:30 up at NoFo Brewco in Cumming, Georgia. Come see us there. And then I'll be making the way back down into the city, and I'll have AST for you on Sunday from 9 to 11. So all the soccer talk all weekend. I'll be headed to Athens after the U.S. game tomorrow, watching that in Gainesville. I'll be headed to Athens for Atlanta United, too. You can listen to that broadcast on soccerdownhere.net/listen. A couple things that have popped off since we started the show tonight. Canada, not great for them tonight in Montreal. Jesse Marsh getting criticized, not taking it very well. That's kind of typical. 1-1 draw for Canada against Ireland. I didn't think Canada looked very good in the portions of the match I got to see. It was an own goal. They took the lead on the 23rd minute. Equalizer in the 60th. Jesse Marsh said this to the media at the post-game press conference. I'm sure we may get a million questions, but I'm going to be positive, guys. I'll take a bunch of negative questions, but if you ask me negative questions, I'll move on to the next one. Okay. A 1-1 draw to Ireland, and where you didn't look great. I don't know. There's going to be questions. A win over Uzbekistan earlier in the week in a rainy, cold Edmonton was fine. That was a solid win. But this was not a good performance. And look, we're seeing this a lot right now with a lot of teams. Canada's not the only one. France with a loss. Spain with a draw. Canada with a draw. Senegal with a loss to the U.S. Croatia with a loss at home. We'll see how England does after a disappointing window coming in. I think the favorites are the favorites, I think. But this feels like one of the more wide open run-ins to the tournament that I can remember, with a lot of odd results. I mean, Iraq going to Spain to get a 1-1 draw? What? Cote d'Ivoire going to France to beat them in Nantes? 2-1? What? Like, I don't know. Canada and Ireland 1-1 is not a crazy result, but it's not good to build momentum. The U.S. has been one that has come through this pretty well. To be perfectly honest, the U.S. is in good shape after the win against Senegal. Let's see how it goes tomorrow against Germany. Like I've said, Germany's going to test them in some different ways. I want to see what comes out from the German side of things about Lennart Karl. He was one of the more exciting young players in this tournament coming in. It doesn't sound like he's going to be able to play in the tournament at all. And it kind of gets us to an injury question that I wanted to dig into a little bit, because it's come up a lot with Chris Richards. And is he going to make the World Cup team with the injuries? Here's why I'll tell you that I think he does. And I don't even feel like it's much of a gamble to say this. The U.S. didn't bring anybody else into camp. They're not hedging their bets here. You don't have Walker Zimmerman there. Other guys who could have been part of this group, they're not there. The training group is the training group. There's nobody secret. There's nobody additional. Argentina, for example, took additional guys who are not on the World Cup roster right now to their training camp, just in case, because they had a number of injuries that they're concerned about. They still might need to make an injury call up. Okay, those guys have been training with the team ahead of the tournament. You don't have that happening for the U.S. So I think Chris Richards is going to be there. I think what Mauricio Pochettino, one, I think he's being a little cagey, a little coy about it. But two, I think he is legitimately frustrated that it's kind of lingered as long as it has, because he didn't expect it to. If he had expected it to, he would have brought one or two other center backs into the group. Now, I think you've got cover. I think you're fine. And I think it leads to the bigger part of the conversation when we're talking about these pre-tournament injuries. Neymar, Messi coming in, although I think he's going to end up being all right. They're just going to be careful with him. Montiel, Paredes, Neymar's a big one on the Brazil side. Richards for the U.S. There's others throughout World Cup rosters. But they're not all the same. And you have to decide, do you have enough cover to have a player miss a few games? Because if they are a significant player, if they are Chris Richards to the U.S., I think Neymar is significant in a different way for Brazil, but he is significant. You look at Alphonso Davies for Canada. That was the other one I was reaching for and couldn't find initially. Alphonso Davies, Chris Richards are both similar. If they are healthy, they are 100% starting. So because of that importance, if you think they're going to be back to contribute to game three of the group stage, if you feel like you've got enough cover, you take that gamble and you take them to the World Cup and you hope that they can get back and help you when you need it. Now, you do have to worry, and I think if you are some teams, and I don't think the U.S. has this concern, I don't think they should, but if you look at Chris Richards and you're like, man, he might not be able to play until game three, and I don't think this is the case. I think it's more like game two, and I think he might be available off the bench in game one. But if you look at it like, man, he might not even be able to get on the field until game three, do you have enough to get the results you need to get to the knockout round? That's your question. It's not purely, am I taking this player or not taking this player because of their injury? It's how important are they to this group? How important are they to the games that matter the most deep in the tournament in knockout games? How important are they in terms of getting me to the knockout rounds? Can I get to the knockout rounds without them? Do I need to bring in somebody? Am I thin in that position? There's so many moving parts, so it's not the same conversation for every player. Lamine Yamal, you're taking, and you're expecting him to be available in the group stage. You're taking him, no question. If Chris Richards, you expect him to be available in the group stage, you're taking him, no question. It's not even a thought. I don't think it's a thought, period, because if it was, you would have had at least one other center back in camp in this pre-tournament portion of the World Cup. You don't. That makes me think that there is not a concern about Chris Richards being on the roster. If there is, you might want to call somebody to join you out in California for the next week and get them fit, because they're not going to be at the same training level. They're not going to be at the same pace. They're not going to be at the same intensity because they haven't been in training camp. So because that's the case, my guess is Chris Richards, no matter what, is going to the World Cup. And I think he should, just like I think Alphonso Davies should, because to me, I mean, he's Canada's most important player. You got to take him, unless he's not going to be able to play until a quarterfinal, which you're probably not going to get to. So you have to take him. And he should be available by that point. I do have questions about Jesse Marsh in Canada, and I think he's done a good job, but I don't know if he's done as good of a job as deserving a extension before the World Cup, which he got. We've seen this play out before. Yes, Jurgen Klinsmann, I'm talking about you, where you give the extension before the tournament and then the tournament isn't so great and then it isn't so great after that. Craig Berhalter was a different situation, a much more complicated situation. And I will hold to the fact that Greg Berhalter could still be the manager for the U.S. men's national team and doing well if Tim Weah hadn't lost his head at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in the Copa America game too. That red card and that subsequent result then puts you into a situation where you had to beat one of the best teams in the tournament in Uruguay to advance, and you weren't capable of that. The red card changed Greg Berhalter's life. And it's fascinating, and he kind of talked about this today in some interviews. It's fascinating that the last game for the U.S. before this World Cup, where he would have been the coach, is at his current employers, Chicago Fire, training there. He's talking to the team. Weston McKennie talked about how important Berhalter was to him, talked about crying in front of him. The players wanted Greg Berhalter to come back. And yeah, there were a lot of complications based on a lot of silliness, and it's old history at this point. Ultimately, results are what cost him his job, I think, and a lot of external noise, but the results led to the external noise. That's true. I do think it was a little unfair, some of the things that were said at the time, but I remember having this conversation on this show after that loss to Panama that now his job's on the line. And it was. And look, I'm sure he'd rather be in that national team situation, leading his country, a national team that he played for. I'm sure he'd rather be there right now, getting ready for a World Cup on home soil. but it worked out pretty good for him. What he's doing in Chicago is really impressive. He's a very good manager. And for whatever reason, he's become one of the punching bags that U.S. soccer likes to create for itself, at least media and Twitter and hashtags. That's a shame sometimes, because I think Greg Berhalter is a far better manager than he gets credit for. Just like I thought it was absurd, and talked about this with Josie Altidore when I did my interview with him last week. Thought it was absurd the amount of vitriol that he took and Michael Bradley took about that team not qualifying for the World Cup for 2018. It wasn't just on those two guys. A lot of it was on Jurgen Klinsmann at the beginning. Bruce Arena made mistakes in that last game against Trinidad with the lineup, with the setup. I thought he made some big mistakes in that because you kind of knew how Trinidad was going to play, and I don't think he set up the team to deal with it the best. That's a shame. Guys missed their opportunity because of that. It's a real shame. But at times we create villains that I don't think are deserving of the title. That just happens in this game a lot in this country. It happens in other countries too. I'm not saying it's unique to it, but I think it happens too much in this country based on who we are and based on who this team is. I think this is a team, especially this year, that should be looking at knockout games. And I say games plural because this is a team that should feel like they are good enough, no matter where they finish in the group, to go into a knockout game on home soil and win. They should feel that way. And I think they do. I think the togetherness of this group is really, really important. And again, we'll get into a lot of deep dive stuff on the U.S. and the Germany match tomorrow. But I wanted to talk about one aspect of Pochettino's press conference today that stuck out to me. And I wrote about it over at soccerdownhere.net. He got into a little bit of just how his coaching has evolved. And I think it came up when he was asked about allowing Brendan Aaronson to leave camp for a couple of days, a day, day and a half, I'm not sure, to attend his own wedding. And Aaronson talked about it this week. He had to book everything, as people who have done this know, like he had to book everything out 2+ years in advance. Well, when he booked it, camp would not have started by then, but the window got longer after he booked it, and it started to become evident that training camp would be open by the time the wedding would be happening. And he said he spoke to Pochettino back in March about it, or maybe even before that, if I remember correctly. And he offered to cancel his wedding. And Pochettino said, no, we'll make it work. And I think players watched it on a phone at training camp. He was back the next day. He said, just talking about managing his players, he said the society's evolved. When the evolution is there, I think only what you can get is the best work from him. More commitment, more enthusiasm, more energy, more everything. He talked about how coaches demanded more from players when he was playing, how family just didn't factor into that at all. And that version of leadership just doesn't really suit current players. Being a leader today, he said, means being more human than in the past. And I think that's another reason why, and Greg Berhalter, I think, did this as well. And that's why this element of Pochettino is really easy for this group to buy into. He treats the guys like they're human beings. And I think they respond to it well. And then you add in the fact that, like Weston McKennie said last week, he's been in youth national teams with Alex Zendejas since they were like 15. They're calling youth coaches on the bus to training camp the first day because they've shared all those moments. You know, Christian Pulisic has played with all these guys for a long time. They've embraced Alex Freeman as the new kid, and he's fit in really well. Tim Ream, Unk, he's fit in and led by example in a lot of ways. You got a lot of leaders in this group. I think that togetherness is going to be a big factor because the three group games are not going to be easy. They're all winnable. They're all losable. None of them are slam dunks. And you're going to have moments in them where if it's Paraguay sitting deep and defending and countering against you, if it's Australia just literally trying to beat you up, if it's Turkey and the skill that they possess, they're going to face different challenges in all three games. How they handle it is going to come down to how closely knit they are, how together they are, and I think how supported they are. I really hope tomorrow is good. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a big win. If it's a draw, that's fine. If it's the right kind of draw. But I hope it's good to this team going into that game in Los Angeles next Friday night. It'll be ending right around this time next week. I hope that this team goes into that game with momentum from tomorrow. Because if they do, and the crowd is raucous, and the crowd gets behind them, it will have a huge impact on the match. It'll have a huge impact on this team, and especially late in the game. And I think the U.S. is one of the teams in this tournament that can take advantage of their opponents late. I think that's going to be a defining factor of this tournament. Late goals. One, because as we talked about earlier in the group stage, I think one win will be enough to get you out of the group, as long as you don't get blown out somewhere else. Even if you are losing in another game by multiple goals, if you get a late goal, that could save you. That could, if you take a 4-1 loss and turn it into a 4-2 loss, that might be enough. That might be enough for you to get through. So games are going to go down to the final whistle. Teams aren't going to just settle for results, because the individual goals are going to matter. And I think there are certain teams, and I look at the U.S., I look at Ecuador, I look at potentially Colombia, I look at potentially a Senegal, that are going to thrive in that final 15 minutes and are going to change their tournament trajectories in the final 15 minutes. I'm really looking at the final 15 minutes of games as being a giant deal this summer. The heat, the conditions, I think a long season for a lot of teams. There's going to be some players and there's going to be some teams that just don't have it for 90 minutes. They might have it for 60. And they're going to have to do enough in that 60 to make up for the 30 where they don't have it. There are going to be teams that are going to have it for 90. And there are going to be teams that grow as the night goes on, as the game goes on. And I think those are the teams to watch. Ecuador is the one that I think has the potential to take advantage of that the most. We'll see. The U.S. is right there. Absolutely right there. As we get closer to this tournament, we're going to dig into some other aspects of how it will look a little different this year. There's a lot of different stuff. Talked about it off the top with the pre-match ceremony. It's going to look different. It's not individual introductions like the Club World Cup, which upset a lot of folks. I didn't really care. It just took a little bit too long. You're going to have all the players on the match day squad out in the center circle for the national anthems. You're going to have teams not come out together. They're going to come out from separate tunnels. That's interesting. I think that could be kind of cool, honestly. You will have then the handshakes and all that at the end. I'm okay with it. I want to see how it works. And more than anything, I want to see how the fans in the stadiums react to it. But I think it'll be all right. The other element of kind of what will look different in this tournament is some of the rules. And we've talked about a few things as we've gone this week. The fake injury for the goalkeeper that leads to the tactical timeout, that's not going to be allowed. I'm absolutely good with that because that's annoying to me. VAR is getting expanded powers. The most significant addition involves fouls committed before set pieces are put into play. If an attacking player commits a foul before a corner or free kick is taken, and that foul has a direct impact on a goal, on a penalty, or a disciplinary sanction, VAR can step in now. In the past, you couldn't if it happened before the ball was kicked. Now you can. And Pierluigi Collina, he pointed to a very specific example, England's goal against Uruguay at Wembley in March, where Adam Wharton blocked the run of Jose Maria Jimenez before Cole Palmer's corner was taken. That allowed the ball to get through to Ben White. Under the old protocol, you could not review that. Under the new one, you can, and the corner would be retaken. I do want to see this on corners be dealt with because I think it's gotten out of hand and how much contact, how much screening, how much grabbing, how much stuff happens before the whistle that affects it. I'm glad this is now going to be able to be reviewed in these situations. I think the other big one that has been talked about is the covering of your mouth. And I want to be clear, because I think the rule is clear, but people haven't explained it clearly. If you're talking to a teammate and it's not a contentious situation, you're talking to a teammate, you don't want anybody to see what you're saying to your teammate about something tactically or whatever. If you cover your mouth in that situation, that's fine. The rule is specifically in confrontational exchanges. That's when, if you are in an argument with an opposing player and you cover your mouth, now it's a red card offense. And this all goes back to the Champions League match in February, where Benfica winger Gianluca Prestiani was accused of directing initially racial abuse towards Vinicius Jr. Prestiani put his hand up and said, "No, I did not do that. That is not what happened." And he said he directed homophobic slurs at him instead. Same penalty, same stupidity. But he covered his mouth when he did it. So then it becomes a, well, did he say it? Did he not say it? And there was enough evidence from Real Madrid players that heard something. And then Prestiani admitted that he said something that I guess he thought was okay, but it wasn't. He got a 6-game UEFA ban. Friendly conversations, you can cover your mouth if you're trying to keep comments private. Confrontational conversations, exchanges, now those are red card offenses if you cover your mouth. We'll get into some of the other rules as we go and all of that, but those are a few things to keep in mind as we head into the last weekend before the tournament starts. You got England and New Zealand tomorrow. You got the U.S. and Germany. You got some other interesting games. Portugal, I do want to see how they look against Chile. I want to see if Belgium is for real after that win against Croatia, because I had not really counted on Belgium too much in this tournament. Winning at Croatia 2-0 is really impressive. Is Belgium a real contender in this tournament? Do you have to put them in that category? I didn't before. We'll see how they handle Tunisia and Brussels tomorrow. A lot of things are going to come out of these games tomorrow to talk about. Other stuff, we want to hear updates on Leonard Karl from Germany tomorrow morning from the German media. Not expected to play tomorrow, obviously. We'll see if he's going to be able to continue in the tournament. And we'll be looking for updates out of Paraguay on Julio Enciso, the best attacking player for Paraguay, injured tonight, left the field in tears, not under his own power. Unclear as to what the injury is. It sounds like it is muscular in the quadriceps, but that's not confirmed. We'll see if there's any updates out of Paraguay tomorrow. They had a 4-0 win over Nicaragua tonight. Miguel Almirón with a goal, Matias Galarza with a goal. You might have to rely on both of them to do more in the attacking half for Paraguay if you lose your best attacking player in Julio Enciso. All right, and what's becoming a tradition on the stoppage time portion of the show, the Panini sticker pack. I still got a good number of packs. I've been saving them. I have to open them faster. I'll do two tonight. We'll see what we get. I opened two from CVS earlier, and they weren't that great. Let's see what we get out of this one. Still no Messi for me, and I'm looking for a Lionel Messi. All right. We got Johnny Placide from Haiti. We got Josip Sutalo from Croatia. I think I've got a couple duplicates now. Almoez Ali from Qatar in the blue variant as well. Xavier Slager. I know that is a duplicate. Okay. I don't know how special this one is. I'm going to have to look it up. But the old school Panini logo, and I'll actually dig up the story on that logo because it's a famous story from Italy about that shot and how it was recreated. But that is card 00. That's cool. I'm going to see what that means. Brazil. I got a Brazil 1962 one, but now I got the Brazil team shot here. And Japan's Henry Hiroki Mochizuki. That's this pack. So I got the cool Panini sticker. 130 says Enciso's out apparently for 3 weeks. I'm going to wait and see if we get more updates, because I don't know if you can actually make that kind of a call just yet. We'll see. But it looked like his World Cup was out of reach with that injury. It looked that way on the field. We'll see. If we hear anything more, we'll update it tomorrow on the show. Noon tomorrow from Gainesville at Nofo Bruco. Come out and hang out with us. Come see us if you can make it. We'll get you ready for US-Germany. You can watch it with us at Nofo. All right, last Panini pack for the night. Mario Pasalic. I like that one from Croatia. Nasser Al-Dawasari from Saudi Arabia. Our Uzbekistan friends, and I've got to work on the pronunciation of this one. Eldor Shomurodov. I think that's pretty decent. He is their legendary scorer. So we've got, I think that's my first Uzbek card, by the way. Lovro Majer from Croatia. Ayamu Seku from Japan. Eo Tanaka from Japan. I know that's a duplicate. Dominik Livakovic from Croatia. I know that's a duplicate. All right, I'm starting to get into the duplicates too. I'm going to have to go to one of these trading swap meets, because I still need my Lionel Messi card. I do not have that just yet. I got Weston McKennie in an offline opening, so that's kind of cool. I got Brendan Aaronson, I think, a couple nights ago. So starting to get a few of the U.S. players, but not many. No Lionel Messi. I did get Lamine Yamal. Out of the big stars of this tournament, I do not have Cristiano Ronaldo. I have not gotten, I have gotten Kevin De Bruyne. No Harry Kane, no Lionel Messi, no Kylian Mbappe, no Christian Pulisic. What other stars? I've got Sonny. I've got Yamal. Got some. Ropes, are you going, asking me if I'm going to any of the Atlanta World Cup games? Yes, I did get my credential for media. That doesn't mean I'll get into every game, because there will be like per game quotas and such. And I think it might be difficult a little bit later in the tournament, depending. But yes, yeah, I do bet Madison will get another Messi sticker before I get one. I'll be very upset with this. If she gets one, no, actually I won't be, because then I'll make her trade it to me, because I'll trade her somebody that I've got two of, or even somebody else, because I need to get a Lionel Messi sticker. Come on. But no, I've been approved for my credential. I don't actually have it in hand yet. But yeah, it's pretty exciting. There's a couple games that are going to be tricky with the radio schedule. The Uzbekistan DR Congo one is one that I probably won't go to because of that, because that's a 7:30 game and then we're on at 10. It might be kind of hard to pull off. The semifinals tricky, and some of it's going to depend on things as we get a little bit closer, because we're on at 6 that night. The game's at 3. If it goes to extra time and penalties, I might be walking out of there at 6 o'clock. I won't be doing any of the press conference or mix zone or any of that afterwards. So we'll definitely want time, but I'll have to get a location within a few minutes of the stadium. And that will almost for sure be the Brewhouse Cafe South downtown. It's just being set up there ahead of time so I can run in and do it, or having somebody there to cover me for a segment or two. We will be a couple of updates that I don't know if I've talked about entirely here on the show. The World Cup final, our 92.9 event, will be at the Brewhouse South Downtown location, which is going to be awesome. I've been in there twice this week as it's getting finished, and everything in South Downtown and Centennial Yards, for that matter, is coming down to the wire, and the Atlanta road system. It's all really coming down to the wire, but the South Downtown Brewhouse location, it feels like, and I don't know if it's the giant windows in the front, I don't know if it's kind of the older, like, exposed walls, the floor, I'm not quite sure what it is that gives me this vibe, but it feels like you're walking into a soccer bar in Buenos Aires, or, you know, in Spain. it's really cool. It's just got like a cool vibe to it. Gave him some stuff for decorations as well. So I'm excited to see how Umberto and Michelle end up using that. Could be some things that you guys might have seen before, some things that you haven't. Really excited to see how it all comes together. They are at last update, expecting to be open for the 15th for sure, for the first Atlanta game in the tournament. They are hoping to be open sooner than that, but they are still waiting on some permits and some licenses and things like that to get done. And they're not the only ones. The South Downtown area, they're going to show games in the, I think it's the Founders Park is the name. It's a park that is almost across the street from Brewhouse Soto, down across the street and up like a couple doors. And it's between Barbecue Place and El Tesoro in South Downtown, which are both going to be awesome. And the Brewhouse menu there is going to be awesome. Really excited about the South Downtown portion of all this development. I have a feeling I'm going to be spending a lot of time down there, especially after games, especially before games, Atlanta United games as well. Really looking forward to all of that. So that's part of the summer schedule that it's going to be. Ropes, that's awesome. Morocco, Haiti is one that I think I actually no, that's one that I'm not sure, because if I am there, I'll probably be doing AST from Brewhouse Soto after, because that's a 6 o'clock kick and I'm on at 9 that night. So that one feels like I can pull off because it's group stage. There won't be any extra time. If I'm out of there right at the final whistle and go, I think it's a mile. I'm not even sure if it's actually a mile, because if I go out of the gates near the Falcon, so this is really different than how I would normally go out for like an Atlanta United game, where I'll go out through the loading dock typically. Or I come in through the loading dock and I'll go out on the other side, really through gate one. That's typically what we do because we usually park in the red deck. Let me see how far it is to Brewhouse South Downtown. This is what happens on the stoppage time portion of Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Things get weird. It's weird on Google to look up Mercedes-Benz Stadium and it automatically transforms you to Atlanta Stadium. That's always funny. Let's look at the walking directions from Atlanta Stadium to Brewhouse. Do they have the South Downtown location in here yet? I don't think they do. They do not. It is on Apple Maps, so that's cool. Let me get the address because I don't know it yet. This is the fun stuff that happens. 89 Broad Street Southwest is the address. So let's do that. All right. It is 0.7 miles. So you would come out. I think you could even be a little more direct than that. I'd have to see how this would go. But yeah, it's less than a mile. You're walking down Mitchell Street for most of it. No, sorry, it's a mile and a half. Okay, that's what I thought. It's a mile and a half. You're getting... No, I'm a moron. It's also very, very late tonight at this point. I'm exhausted. It's just under a mile, depending on which way you go. If you go MLK, it's a little bit closer. If you go Mitchell, it's like a tenth of a mile longer. So I think a lot of it will depend on how you're able to get out of the stadium, which point of exit is going to be the quickest, all that. So that's a very long-winded way of saying that, yes, I think Morocco, Haiti, I will be at the semifinal. I'm going to have to make plans and configurations, especially if Argentina's in the semifinal, because I'll be a mess.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
1:30. No, you're good. You need someone to tell you what happened with Tata when he first left the team. How'd that go down? Well, I don't know. I mean, first off, there were articles that were written at the time, and there were stories that were one-sided that blamed Carlos Bocanegra. I do not know those to be true. I was told the opposite. I asked Tata about it one time when he came back with Mexico to play at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and he did not say anything negative about Carlos Bocanegra at all. Now, Tata's also a very magnanimous gentleman in media situations and probably would not have done that. But he did not take that opportunity to say anything negative. He was here for 2 years and got an opportunity to work less and be paid more by Mexico and be able to spend more time in Argentina with his family. I think that's the story. I think that's why. Tata Martino, and I think this is something that very often gets lost in this conversation, and I don't know why, because we've talked about it a lot. He generally does not spend more than two seasons in the same place. And there are a lot of managers who do this. I think South American managers, this is more common just because of the nature of South American football. Cycles last a little bit shorter. Some of it is the nature of the competitions where they play the short seasons. They do the Apertura Clausura kind of deal. And your window for being in a job and having a successful run is shorter. Tata had not spent more than 2 years anywhere until Mexico, ever in his career. I think Argentina was less. Yeah, Argentina was less than that because he took over after 14. I don't think right after 14. I think it was a little bit after that. And then he left in after the Copa America Centenario in 2016, and that's when he became available and took the Atlanta job. So 130, I mean, look, I don't know why. I haven't had that conversation off the record with Tata Martino, and if it was off the record, I wouldn't be able to share it. But I've never gotten the impression that it was because he didn't get along with Bocanegra or Bocanegra forced him out. I never got that impression. I got the impression that he wanted to do something different, and Paraguay was different, and national teams are different too, Ropes. It's a different cycle entirely. It's a lot less games. And I think that's why Mexico was appealing. I really do, because he got paid a lot of money by Mexico to go there in 2019 through the 2022 World Cup, and he had downtime, and he was able to spend time with family in Rosario in Argentina. And I think that's something that he has referenced when he left here, when he left Miami, and there was, when he left Miami, I believe there was a health issue with a family member, and I never saw any other detail than that. And look, not our, doesn't have to be something that we have detail on. But he likes to be in Argentina. He likes to be in Rosario around his extended family. So, yeah. So the two jobs that he spent more than 2 years at would be Paraguay and Mexico. I mean, I will literally double check that right now just to be sure. But I believe that is the case. He wasn't at Miami longer than that. I mean, working backwards, you know, he started this one this season. He was at Miami for a year and a half. He was at Mexico from 19 through the end of 22. Here in Atlanta, 17 and 18, two seasons. He was at Argentina. Did he take over right after the World Cup in 24 or in 14? He did in August. So he was there for just under, well, we're probably right at 2 years through Copa America Centenario. Barcelona, one season. Newell's Old Boys might have been three seasons, but that's like, again, the Apertura Clausura kind of situation. Took over at Newell's Old Boys when they were close to relegation in 2012. Got them to the Torneo Final in 13, won that. That was the second. The Argentine season was then very confusing because it wasn't exactly Apertura Clausura. It was even more confusing than that, but short seasons. He got to the semifinals of the Copa Libertadores, and then the opportunity came to go to Barcelona in July of 2013, and he took it, and not a shock. That was prime Barcelona time. He was at Paraguay from 2007 to 2011. But before that, again, Libertad from 05 to 06, Colón from in just 2005, Cerro Porteño in 03 to 04, Libertad from 02 to 03, Instituto for 1 year, Platense for 1 year. He's not someone who has spent a lot of time at any club ever. And Atlanta's no exception to that. So it's a valid question about what would happen next and how long he would stay here. And I don't know. Don't have an answer to that. Yeah, I mean, they were separate, the two stints at Libertad. He was not there for more than 2 years at a time. And it's kind of the same as Atlanta, right? That's what I know. 130. I mean, I can't tell you anything else because I don't know it. But I never got the impression being around it in 17 and 18. And we weren't around it as much back then. I think Tata has gotten more accustomed to kind of the U.S. media style and probably the U.S. broadcast style as well. Home broadcasts are not the same in Argentina as they are here, where it's from the team. You have home broadcasts, but it's like from a radio station as a home broadcast, as opposed to working directly with the team for a home broadcast. And those radio station broadcasts in Argentina can be a little more toxic at times. And he's talked about it with how the media at times in Argentina can be a lot more difficult to deal with. And I know that was one reason why he wanted to get out of Argentina, both after the national team experience and after his time at Newell's. Now, Barcelona was a sweet landing spot after Newell's, but he's been pretty open about that. So I think in 2017 and 2018, he probably had a different view of us doing radio than he does now, where he's been very kind and we've spoken a good bit. And he was always kind, don't get me wrong, but he's been much more open to speak and have conversations ahead of games and just catch up and talk to us. And he understands English pretty well. He speaks it okay. I think he speaks it probably better than he thinks he does, but he wants to be clearly understood. And I totally get that because I'm not comfortable speaking Spanish, even though I understand it pretty well. And I can get some of the basics across, but I don't want to look silly. And I think that's part of his concern in English as well. So, again, long-winded answer because that's what happens on stoppage time. Yeah, I think there is a chance, 130, that he leaves at the end of the season if it doesn't improve. He's just at a point in his career where, you know, he's 63 years old. He's done this for a long time. He's been managing clubs since 98 at various levels. And he had a long career as a player before that. If it's not fun, if he's not enjoying it, if he's not feeling progress, he has no problem walking away. I hope that isn't the case. Now, the format of what's coming up as well is kind of interesting. And I wonder how that impacts his decision because you're going into a short season in the first half of 2027 and then a normal season for a year, but starting in late July, early August of 27. Now, it will feel a little bit like a split season. And again, for somebody who might want to get back to Argentina and be with family for a while, the new MLS format will be more amenable to that because just look at it from that perspective. And I think it does impact his decision. You're going to come back from World Cup where he's been in Argentina. I think he comes back late next week to Atlanta, and training will start, I believe, on the 16th is when they start training back to prepare for the second portion of the season. But that will end in early November, playoffs after that. Let's say you go on a miracle run to MLS Cup in December. You'll have a month where he can go home to Rosario and spend time with family before coming back into preseason. Then you'll have time at the end of the playoffs in the sprint season in May and June into July, and I'm not sure when camp would open, probably late June, you'd have time to then, again, go back to Argentina for 2, 3, 4 weeks. And then you have a winter break. Like right now, we don't have a break in the middle of our season where you can get away. And that was one of the things he talked about in Miami, where he wasn't going to be able to get home for any period of time. And he talked about it when he left here as well at the end of 2018. Now you'll be able to get home in the middle of the season for a while. If you want to go to another country and spend time, you can. So that changes it. Maybe that makes it a little bit easier to stay if he's seeing some progress. I don't know. I think the biggest thing for him is going to be that progress. And I think he wants to see some progress in the players. I think he wants to see some progress in the quality of the roster. I think he wants to see that what he's trying to get across is working, is landing. And I think it has. I think this team in general has played better from game 1 to game 14. I think I'm seeing more of a Tata Martino team like he wants. I just don't think there's been enough quality in certain parts of the field for it all to resonate in results. So hopefully it does, and hopefully he's motivated to come back and do the sprint season and then do the full season after that. I would expect that that would end his time in Atlanta. I would expect that on the better end of the scale, that that would make it to where he would hopefully stay through, 28? Summer of 28, if he stays for the entire sprint season and season after that. And that takes you to being 65 years old. Yeah. And I don't know if he, I don't know how much longer he wants to coach. I haven't had that conversation with him yet. So that's kind of where it stands right now. We'll see. This ended up going a lot longer than I expected, because you guys asked some good questions and I got on tangents. This is nothing new if you've heard me before. Thank you again. Tomorrow, noon to 2:15, pretty much all U.S.-Germany talk. If there's any updates on Julio and Enciso, if there's any updates on anybody else with injuries, any updates out of the Argentine camp ahead of their game tomorrow against Honduras, we'll talk about all that. Noon to 2:15 on 92.9 The Game on the Odyssey app. Should be on YouTube as well, although that is not a 100% guarantee. Give me about 80%. I think it will be on YouTube, and I think it'll sound good, but it's a little bit different setup because we are at Nofo Bruco in Gainesville. You'll be able to get good seat to watch the game. You'll be able to get Soccer Down Here Lager for the first time. All the cool things. Sunday, we'll be at Nofo Bruco in Cumming from 2 to 3:30. It'll be me and John Nelson again. And then Sunday night, I'll be back here on 92.9 The Game and the YouTube page and the Odyssey app. Full show on radio and the Odyssey app, 9 to 11 p.m. on Sunday. Next week, this whole thing starts. Cannot wait. It's going to be a lot of fun. Thank you for being a part of it. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of the interaction here on YouTube. And I'll be back with you tomorrow. Adios, everybody.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.